Hello and welcome to That EV Cafe Takeaway, that podcast focused on a zero emission future that we all hope for and believe in. And I am especially excited today to introduce to you the wonderful Nick Hay. And we're going to come on to where he's from in a minute. But Nick, welcome.
Thank you.
Very succinct. Well done. And as you know, we always get joined by one of the wonderful members of the team, and we've got the gloriously lovely Sarah Sloman. Sarah, how are you?
Oh, just try keeping me away. I absolutely love the EV Cafe Takeaway podcast series. And credit to you, Paul. You always do such a slick intro. But yes, I'm here to support, here to ask questions. And what's really nice is I think that we've got quite a lot in common with Nick.
I think we have. Nick, I mean, it's worth, like, helping the world. You've done some really senior jobs in this logistics world in particular, very much a focus on cold chain, and you might need to explain what cold chain is for some of our listeners. But I guess sustainability has grown as part of that journey across the years. Give us a glimpse into the world that you've inhabited for the last few years.
So I've been really lucky. I've had some amazing bosses and worked with some great teams. So cold chain, broadly, you can split into either frozen or chilled. Frozen food, the stuff you'd take out of your freezer, or chilled food, the stuff you take out of your fridge. I mean, it's that sort of simple. Most of my career has been within the chill part as opposed to frozen, but I have spent time in both and done one or two other things besides. Chilled food, I work for the Samworth Brothers Group, Ginsters being their well-known brand, but they produce all sorts of lovely chilled foods. And I led their logistics, in-house logistics business, but we also did third-party work. I led that for 5 years. And then I was very lucky, or the chap who gave me the job was very mad to give me the job at Fowler Welsh, which was quite a step up in terms of scale. That was fundamentally produce, fruit and veg, but we also did manufactured food products as well. So various meats, ready meals, etc. I was very proud to lead that business for 10 years. We started a joint venture when I was there. So we developed a joint venture, which was a packing business. So we packed something like 40 million cases of produce per annum for large retailers. So that was anything from kiwis to blueberries, strawberries, etc. Took a while, but built a brilliant relationship with the guy who owned that business. We were listed on AIM, but our chairman was by far the largest shareholder, a chap called Philip Meeson, who taught me a huge amount. Took a while to build his trust. He was a very, very hard taskmaster, but learned a huge amount from him. Starting a joint venture, and then when we decided that it was the right time to sell that business, he allowed me to sell it on his behalf as well, which is a real privilege and great fun. I then floated about for a little while, did a few non-execs, realized I was a bit too young for that, believe it or not. So when the opportunity came to lead Gist, which is the logistics arm now of Marks & Spencer's, with 6,500 people, 700 million plus of cost. I took that opportunity. I did that for a couple of years. And then over the last 12 months, I've done two or three different things, including working for a business called WattStore, who are right at the heart of energy provision. So how do you balance variable demand with renewable energy on a site, and we do that through a combination of tech and also using batteries. So we'll minimize cost through effectively balancing what's produced locally, what's taken from the grid, and batteries. So that's a cracking business that I'm a non-exec of. And on Monday, I'll be starting as MD of Holman UK, which I'm really, really excited about. It's probably, possibly, and this is no reflection on the other businesses I've led, but it's possibly the most excited I've been. I've always been interested in the impact of business on the environment. I think cold stores, by their very nature, use a huge amount of energy. The refrigerants that you use are not great if they escape. So it's something that I've always been around. And I did an engineering degree and was an okay sportsman. And through those two things, the combination of analytics from my engineering degree and small incremental gains from a training and competing perspective. The first time I really got excited about the opportunity to reduce environmental impact was at Samworth's. And I believe we were probably the first fleet in the UK to have telematics across our entire fleet. So we had about 100 tractor units. And that was in 2005. And seeing how you could use all the various measures coming out of the telemetry to support the development of the drivers really excited me. And we made huge progress there. When I joined Fowler Welsh, I did what lots of people do when they go into a business. So I said to myself, I'm not going to make any decisions. I'm just going to sit back and observe for the first 100 days. And on day two, I made my first decision. But that first decision was to say that we took no more kit into the fleet without it having telemetry. Because that fleet, 400 odd tractor units, didn't have any telemetry when I joined. And in that first year, I also made a statement around about the time I joined, MPG was about 8.1. And I said that we would get to 10. And people looked at me like I was insane. And I think it was 2017, we got to an average of over 10. And again, that was through incremental gains. I know you guys are familiar with Mr. Alera. I think most of the industry is familiar with Mr. Alera. To put Paul was our head of fleet. And we did lots of small things. We did some big things as well, but we did lots of small things. But what we were willing to do was try stuff. I'm a great believer that you can try something. If it doesn't work, stop and try something else. We tried lots of stuff with the fleet. We tried, we did all the stuff that people now talk about. We were the first people to really embrace Euro 5. So we had seed vehicles from all the manufacturers before anybody else did. And we embraced it where others were holding off. Do we go Euro, do we go EGR or do we go, I can't remember what it is now. Whatever the other one was called.
EGR and...
SGR, was it? I can't remember.
SGR, yeah.
SGR, yeah. And we knew it was coming. So we were just like, there's no point putting this off. Let's just embrace it and let's learn. Let's make sure we're at the forefront of learning which of the OEMs has got the best product for us. So we took five HGVs from each of the big OEMs. Their very first vehicles in some instances, ran them side by side and really made sure we made the right decision for our business. And that's the approach I've taken. Sorry, that was a very long answer.
That is absolutely fine. But we have broken our own rules. I broke the rules because it was EGR and SCR. And of course they are acronyms. We're not allowed.
We're not allowed those.
Because they're just
exhaust gas recirculation
and selective catalytic reduction.
Thank you.
And this was the EV Cafe podcast brought to you by the acronym police.
If you operate a fleet of cars or vans, you'll know electric is the future. Transitioning to EVs can appear daunting, but with Europe Car, it's effortless. Our long-term EV rentals eliminate the upfront costs, contract commitments, and uncertainty. Instead, you'll get total flexibility, a wide choice of cars and vans, and Europe Car's expert support. So, make the switch without the stress and experience Europe Karma. Search Europe Car Business.
Do you know what? What a career. And I love how naturally the sustainability kind of element of your passion for the industry has sort of grown across that time. And I have a million questions, Nick, because all of the companies, so I was in Mercedes-Benz when you were at Samworth Brothers, and I was in the van division, but we knew a little bit about the truck division, and we were talking to Samworth Brothers at that time. Particularly, you know, new Sprinter coming out, and I think probably we tried to sell you Vito eCell. We tried to sell everybody Vito eCell. So it's been an incredible journey, and I love Paul O'Leary, of course, is just RHA, that's right. Yeah, what a fantastic character he is, and the energy that he has. I can see why you guys got on so well. But tell me, because I'm trying to improve my question asking, because I end up asking five questions in one sentence. So I'm going to ask one question. My one question is, tell me about, or ask, you know, talk to me about the development of the sustainability thing, and how you imagine taking that forward within Holman, and how, because Holman are doing a great job on this. We know Holman very well through Openreach in particular, but how are you going to, how did it come about, and how are you going to take it forward?
I mean, the honest answer to that is I don't know until I get there. I think it's always important to take stock when you join a new business, look at the strengths, and see where you can help people improve. I think what's super attractive to me about Holman is, firstly, they're privately owned. I've worked for a variety of businesses, listed businesses, yeah, Marks and Spencers, cooperatives, Arla Foods early in my career, and family-owned businesses. And there is certainly a long-term approach that you can take when you're privately owned that it's really hard to take when you are listed and you have to report to the city on a regular basis. And there are pros and cons of both. But when you've got an energy transition and the need to invest capital in technology that's not necessarily fully understood and that has variable life, the fact that you're privately owned means that you can take a view that if you're listed, it's really, really difficult to take. So you can take a long-term approach. And that's super exciting to me, because I think the best value in business is built by taking a long-term approach. You can make short-term decisions that give you great numbers in the short term, but damage the business in the long term. And you see that with utilities. Yeah, the utilities were privatized. They started taking money out to keep shareholders happy. And as a result of that, you end up with businesses that are actually weaker than when they were listed. That was a very political statement for me, but it's just by way of example. So that's what's super exciting to me. They've got some great clients, and you've mentioned BT, and others besides. For me, the opportunity to take their core offering, which is far more flexible than just providing a lease deal. So I won't get into lots of technical detail around finance versus ops leases, but fundamentally, the risk reward is shared much more with a client at home than it is with a typical lessor. So you take this long-term view that you can take. You take some great clients. You take a global business that's got huge knowledge and data elsewhere in the world, and you think about the energy transition, and wow, what's not to like? You know, we can do some exciting stuff for our clients. I'm a great believer in collaboration. So you don't form a joint venture with a customer, which is what we did at Fowler Welsh, without being able to collaborate. We signed a long-term collaboration deal with Dairy Crest when I was there at Fowler Welsh. Some of the deals I've done on fleet in various businesses have been through collaboration. So taking a multi-year approach and working with, so Samworth Brothers, we did stellar mileage there. The fleet hardly ever stopped. Everything was double shifted. And if you took a new piece of kit, if you were the OEM, you could get insight as to when you were going to have component failures through our fleet before you could with anyone else's fleet. So we recognized that and we collaborated. And again, Holman's culturally set up to collaborate with people. So it's just a really nice recipe to go into a business that's, I believe, can really add value to its clients and new clients as well. And that's what I enjoy doing.
And in terms of that sustainability journey, where did it really begin and how did it grow?
I think this might sound a bit trite, but I think when my daughter was born, you start to think about the world a bit more than just about yourself and your own role within it. And I think that's probably where thinking about the world in a slightly broader respect came. I think the joy of seeing incremental gains actually adding to both the bottom line, but also a reducing environmental impact is real. And I think it's a chance to lead. So I enjoy doing things that intuitively feel right and then proving that they're right. Again, if I think about some of the other things that we did at Fowler Welsh, we were the first, and again, this was a collaborative deal that we did with Lansing, the forklift truck people. We had the first lithium ion fleet that was 100% lithium ion in the UK, if I recall, in 2016. And again, that was about working with somebody and recognizing that they needed to get hours on the MHE. They needed to understand the product themselves because it was new. We could see the benefit. We recognized there was risk because nobody knew what the uptime or downtime would be. And we worked together and we came up with a deal that meant it was didn't cost us anymore. We had certainty of availability of fleet, and they got all the knowledge that they wanted to start building in terms of the product. And if I remember rightly, that was about 180 pieces of kit. So it's just nice to find ways of moving an industry forwards through collaborating with suppliers. So it's really about whether it's customers or suppliers. And I've done lots of stuff with customers to improve their supply chains and their environmental impact. But at the heart of it, what you've got to understand is it's a commercial world. And, you know, the bits of data, the growth of knowledge that I've described in terms of suppliers, again, with customers, you've got to be commercial about this. So some people are willing to pay more. So some heavy fleets will have HVO as an example, or they've gone ahead in terms of electrification, taking the risk, knowing that it's going to cost them. And there's some great hauliers out there who are doing that as well. But you've got to do that in commercial reality. Yeah, they can't be vanity projects, because if they are, you will run out of money. Yeah, because businesses run out of money if they spend more than they earn. So there has to be a commercial reality to it. And again, I really enjoy finding that commercial solution that works for all parties, but protects all parties as well. And that kind of jigsaw of putting all those things together is good fun.
You've touched on so many different elements that will prick up the ears of the listeners. You've talked about the reality that in chilled goods and cold chain and frozen food, that if that gas gets out, we're in a world of pain. You know, the refrigerants that you use in your systems, we've all been at school in the 90s and they taught us all about it and how awful it is for the environment, but you've grabbed the ball by the horns full space when I said the school in the 90s. For people who are not watching this, they're 70s. In fact listening in the car. Yeah, I just realised what I said out loud. I do apologise, but
showing
the point remains
again.
The same. It's about the fact that we know the issues. We're required by law and policy and legislation to follow the rules, but it takes a leader who understands the benefits of making it a commercially viable product and turning that into something that can scale and grow and prove itself. And we on the EV Cafe have been blessed with Geotab and Webfleet, and data telemetry is in our blood. We've always followed suit the same as you. But if you don't know what the data even means, there's no point really measuring it. And I think you've proven in all of your roles, but if you underpin the progress with data, but it's not just that, is it? Listening to you, Nick, I can tell you make complex subjects simple. You are personable. You have your heart in the right place. You're focused on a green, clean future for your family, your daughter you mentioned there. And I just love that ethos. And where do you think that started for you? Was it like me, a child hearing about the horrors of global warming, or was it much later in your life where you just went, oh, actually, I'm pretty impactful, let me go?
I remember a Blue Peter competition for energy reduction when I was at school, which is in the 80s. Thank you for making me feel old. I'm probably the early 80s, have to confess. And I remember one of the people who won a prize was they developed a ring on a hob that could be different sizes depending on how big the saucepan was. And that resonates with me now, and I still remember that. So I think I became aware of certainly energy and waste at a fairly early age. We didn't have an awful lot when we were growing up as kids, and you know, I wore all of my brother's gear, and he was 5 years older than me, and I can tell you it was well out of date by the time I put it on. I've always been aware of waste, and I guess, you know, my parents, post-war generation, you know, their approach to waste, even now, is super frustrating. You can buy a new set of glasses. The ones we used when we were kids, they can go in the bin. I think that generation was not wasteful in the way that we are today in consumerism, et cetera. I think that's probably part of it. And I think probably that impacted me at a fairly early age. What I also recognize is in an industry that's often commoditized and not properly valued for the service it brings, you have to find ways of differentiating. And you can do that by helping solve your clients' problems. And most food manufacturers will be focused on reducing their CO2. It's now legislated that businesses have to report on their CO2. I think there's a danger that people are too focused on CO2, i.e. they're ignoring other things. But yeah, it is a key measure for people nowadays. And those environmental impacts, if you can innovate and be at the leading edge of how you help your clients reduce those things in commoditized markets, that can differentiate you and enable you to be in a better position in your competition. As much as I, you know, you said some very kind words, but there is also a commercial reality to this, which is, it can be a differentiator and enable you to grow and strengthen your business.
Yeah, it's that incremental improvement that you talked about with your target, where they looked at you like you were crazy because there's no way we could ever get to that level of fuel efficiency. And it really is. This whole podcast was designed for innovators, collaborators and pioneers, as Paul says so eloquently at the top of each show. And that is 100% you. You have looked at your landscape ahead of you and thought, this little target, little inverted commas, is huge if we can achieve it. And you have paved the way quite literally in those. I've actually got a personal, I live down, spent a lot of time in Bristol, and it's a wonderful area for UK commerce and industry. People don't realise how massive the Avonmouth dock and port area is and how fundamental that, below seawater in lots of cases, by the way, strip of land is for the rest of the UK with import and export of vehicles, products, produce. And that whole sort of, I never knew how to say it, GIST, I think is right, isn't it? G-I-S-T. The logistics span. You can't be on the motorway or the local roads and not see those vehicles moving around. And that's what excites me next. And I hope you feel the same. You mentioned the expense of some of the alternative fuels earlier. You know, if you ever go on the M4, you're going to see FSEW, the freight haulier who uses entirely zero emission now. In fact, they joined us on the Welsh EV rally, and that was when they had lost their last diesel vehicle. So they're heavily promoting electric. I want to know what balance you think we need to strike. And I think one of the big, I think it was, I won't dare guess actually, but one of the European truck manufacturers said today, it's good to talk about the future, but we're also talking about the now, and then went on to suggest the new type of fuel they're going to be deploying for their trucks. And I sort of thought, well-worded PR team, but it felt like a bit of a distraction from what everyone else is trying to achieve with electrification. I'd just love to hear your view.
I think I've got lots of views on that.
So. Yay!
So I think the first thing I'd say is horses for courses. Logistics is incredibly broad. Yeah. So you've got people doing, yeah, and let's be honest, logistics can include the person who's coming around to maintain something in your home in a van. Yeah. So you've got that right the way through to long haul, heavy goods vehicles. it can't possibly be that what is right for one is right for everything else, especially during a period of transition and the development of technology. So I think it's really important that people understand the application and think about what has the least impact for the application they're in. And so I think that's a really important thing to recognize. Not all businesses can do the same thing. I think there is a real challenge around the risk as well of being an early adopter. I think government has a role to play, and at the moment it's being reactive. There isn't really a long-term clear plan. Access to the grid is a real challenge, and again, that's where WattStore can really help people in terms of how they access power and even their load. So there's lots of challenges. There's lots of businesses out there helping people with those challenges. And so you've also got this problem of, well, who do I go with? And how do I know they're telling me the truth? So it's only through a bit of trial and error, I think. I think you have to be willing to try some stuff. And if it doesn't work, try something else. But undoubtedly, I think I've been quite shocked, if I'm honest, at the speed with which the businesses are providing this technology. I know in China, and they've just been to China, Paul, the speed of development of technology over there is huge. It's incredible. And I think the European OEMs are a bit behind when you compare them to China. So I think it's keep an open mind, embrace things wherever you can, look for data and test that what you're doing is actually right, and be willing to take a small risk. And it's about taking an educated risk. If you've got 100 vehicles, don't jump in with all 100 straight away. You know, work your way in, feel your way in, make sure you know what's right for your business. That's my view. I think there is still a role for ICE, internal combustion engine. There you go. Covered it off. I think there's still a role. I think it's super interesting that JCB have invested a huge amount in hydrogen. I suspect that's because a lot of their applications are not going to have easy access to the grid, and therefore they have to have an alternate. So again, that's just another example of where it's horses for courses and really understanding the application, et cetera. So I don't think it's one size fits all. I think it's about being open-minded, understanding your operation, and seeking things that can work in your operation.
Yeah, with data. We've come back to that point again. And actually, JCB have done all right. They've got a couple of the smaller, lighter electric stuff. But yeah, hydrogen's the one. But I'm passing back to Paul now, but I can't do that without commenting on your sort of leadership style and communication style. You're just cool as a cucumber. You just get all this stuff straight out from the back of your head to the front of your head and out your mouth, and we can all completely relate and nod along and completely understand. And that's a really strong leadership quality. And I just wanted you to hear that. It's fantastic.
That's very kind. That's because I spent hours and hours preparing.
No, you didn't. I don't think you did. Love
well,
it.
But this is what's fantastic, is that there is such a wealth of knowledge that is coming to, I mean, I'm going to say my sector, because the van sector is sorely in need of insight that you've learned. Now, here's the strange thing. You know, trucks, you would argue, they're at 1%, there or thereabouts, of electrification. They've been, you know, but efficiency, like your 8 miles to 10 miles per gallon, has been absolutely paramount in a margin-challenged industry where a 20% saving or 25% improvement in efficiency, you know, on that MPG has probably added a ton of money to your bottom line. You know, that was absolutely critical. So, you know, I can see, I'm really excited about how, you know, this knowledge, this insight that has been hard fought for is now going to come to play in that sort of very application-centric, use case-centric world of commercial vehicles in the smaller sector. And I'm not too sure that any of the heavy goods kind of companies have done really well in terms of the leasing and rental companies have done really well in the van sector. And what I'm also certain of is that there's not many lease cos that have done a great job in that sector either, because they're stepping up from cars, which has been pretty easy, to move into the van sector. What I've got a follow-up question which will take us in a different direction, but whilst we're here, what excites you about the van sector specifically? Because obviously Holman, that's the majority of their world. I know they do go into heavies and stuff like that, but the van sector is really quite important for Holman. Talk to me a little bit about what you see there and how you anticipate kind of intervening.
Again, it's back to the word collaboration. I think the leasing sector as a whole, and that's not just aimed at vans, leasing sectors as a whole have been about moving assets off people's balance sheets in order that they're using somebody else's money and they accept there's a potential premium for that, but they're also getting the benefit of people buying at scale. And it's a fairly, dare I say it, has been a fairly one-dimensional service. Yeah, it's an asset provision. What excites me is the ability to take that service provision and really work and collaborate with clients to choose the right kit, to choose when that kit is exited. So again, if you take most asset provision, it's pretty binary. You sign a contract, it's for a fixed period of time, and there may be a balloon payment at the end, or there may be a kickback depending on the RV, but fundamentally it's a fairly simple and binary contract that runs for a fixed period of time. If you think about the volatility of business, and again, if you think about business as a whole at the moment, risk is something we're all increasingly having to think about and live with. So yeah, that goes back to 2008 with the financial crisis, for those of us who can remember, to COVID, to wars, and all of the, and global weather patterns. You know, there's lots of things that are going to challenge and continue to challenge business. And business, therefore, I know many, many businesses that had global pandemic on their risk register pre-2020 that didn't have a plan. It was on the risk register. Yeah, we recognize there's a potential risk, but they didn't have a plan for what they would do in the event of. And 2020 really changed people's approach to risk. And like I said, there's other events that have impacted that as well. But what that means is we have a world where variability is increasingly something we all have to deal with and manage. And if you're committing to assets in the long term, and let's say you've got multiple contracts with multiple clients and a single fleet, if you lose one of those clients because they were more impacted by a war than another client, how do you get flexibility in your fleet? And again, if you look at the typical asset provision model, it's one of fixed term, you're taking the risk on that fixed term. But actually, because of the way that Holman work with people, there is more flexibility that can be brought to the solution, which when you think about risk and collaborating with your customers is far more, can really add value and help protect your clients in terms of how they view their long-term risk and how much risk they're taking. It's just another way of adding value to people. So there's lots of ways and lots of things that excite me about how you take risk, how you bring knowledge of fleet. And again, in a privately owned world, you can take a longer term view with people than you can if you've got a bank that's sitting behind you and wants their, you know, whatever their yield is everything a single month. So that's super exciting. And if you think about, we are all growing knowledge all the time. Yeah, how many cycles a battery works, how a battery degrades over time, what the second use of that battery is. Yeah. Should you be depreciating the battery over the same period of time as the vehicle, or should you be depreciating them over different periods of time? There's loads of stuff. And I don't know the answers, but I'm excited to work with people and try and work out what the best answers are for various clients, for various applications. And yeah, working with people, it's going to be good fun.
That is, I mean, it's an exciting way of addressing this sector. I think we all need to go on the journey together and learn. But Nick, do you know what? I'm really interested because we all, you and I are a similar age, and I only comment on that because of the fact that we went to school around the same time. And the early 80s was a great period of time. I suspect I was.
It was
somewhat,
because I was born. God.
For those of you not on camera, I'm sending a little message signal-wise to Sarah. but anyway, the thing I'd love to know, Nick, is, like, you know, at school, you were obviously sporty. You sound like a very practical individual, sort of engineering focused and that kind of stuff. But at school, what future did you see for yourself? Because, you know, what was driving that curious? Because you sound like you mentioned you didn't come from a lot particularly. A very, very similar upbringing by the sounds of it in terms of that, you know, generation of parents that were very frugal, they're very careful with money. You know, talk to us about how you were founded as a young person and how did that come out into the world?
I think, as with all your questions, you actually asked several questions and then asked two at the end.
Busted.
I'm so bad at asking questions. How was it for you for growing up? There you go.
So I mean, my foolish ambition was to be an international athlete, and 400 meter hurdles was my event. I candidly didn't have the talent to make it. So the problem with the sport I chose is it's what I call an absolute sport. You can either run 400 meter hurdles in under 50 seconds or you can't. And if you can't, you're not going to make it. And is that binary. Whereas, you know, football, if you apply yourself well, and yeah, you know, there will be other people more talented, but you're part of a team. And if you have other attributes, talent or a lack of talent isn't quite as visible, say swimming, cycling, athletics. And being a deluded individual, it took me far too long to realize that I wasn't going to make it. But I loved it. I loved the process. I loved the people, the banter. I loved the variety of training. I loved pushing myself. I think that was also my family's very academic. My father's a university professor. My sister has a ridiculous number of degrees. My brother's a teacher. All my aunts and uncles went to Oxbridge. You know, it's kind of... I would tell you I'm the black sheep of the family in terms of education. So I grew up in a world that put a lot of emphasis on education, didn't really appreciate my sport, and didn't really understand the commercial world. So I guess... I'm a bit of an outlier from that perspective. But I think, like lots of people who I've met over the years who are great business leaders, they didn't quite make it at something in their younger years. So I know lots of people who nearly made it in sport who now lead businesses. So I think there's a desire to achieve when you're competitive. If you fail because you choose the wrong sport, you just take that competitive nature to achieve. And I'm not one who, I wrote a piece on LinkedIn a few years ago called Don't Be a Stellenwolf. So I'm not one who goes after the competition and attacks competition and likes to crush their competition. I just like to do a good job for the business I'm leading. And by default, that means I'll probably do okay compared to the competition. I think too many people in business are out to beat their competition and drive them. You know, I've heard people say really like, wow, we're going to drive them into the ground. It's like, why? Just do a good job. And that might happen, but that's their lookout. Just focus on what you're doing. And again, I think that probably comes from athletics. There is a camaraderie in athletics. You see it if you ever watch it, you know, particularly field events actually, that their joy at seeing somebody else, you know, Duplantis, who's the world record holder for the pole vault, he breaks world records pretty much every time he goes out. And the other vaulters share in his joy because he's pushing his boundaries. And they share in the joy of others who break their PBs. And it's actually about how you're performing as an individual against yourself in athletics often. And again, I think that ethos kind of comes through. But the drive really is you know, I'm the youngest of three. I'm not an academic. It's probably out of wanting to be noticed and someone to go, oh, actually, yeah, you do add some value to the world, even if you're not the cleverest in the family.
You're literally choking me up. I cannot deal with this level of kindness. It's just absolutely wonderful because I am actually getting to the point where we've joked a lot about age on the show, but you know, I'm 40. I've got two stepkids. I've got my own kid. She's 13. She's got struggles at school. She too isn't academic, but my God, is she clever. And I keep saying to her, like, don't worry about it. Like, you're getting amazing grades, but I know you're not passionate about it. And I'm trying to show her, and I will share, she listens to a lot of our content, I will share this with her. You don't have to tick the normal societal boxes. You really don't. Be compassionate, be wholesome, be kind, be determined, and you will get to where you should be in life. You do not have to compete with your brothers and sisters. And the bit that really, really got me by the throat was wanting to feel like you are seen or significant in a world where go kill them, go get them, push them into the ground. I'm a very compassionate leader myself. I truly believe that a rising tide will lift all ships. And that's something I say a lot in our industry. A lot of work goes into supporting other people and pushing them forward. And trust me, I have lost out on opportunities because I wanted other people to have that opportunity. And very much like the both of you, I'm an 80s kid. It was a semi-detached house. We crammed ourselves in there. It was tiny. Holidays were camping. You know, I'm not in anywhere. It's the time where, was it one of the mortgage companies like 16% or something? My parents had three jobs each. So I have grown up with three jobs. I've always got multiple roles on the go. And I love your ethos. I love your work ethic. I love what you've achieved with something so out of my, I just can't believe. Congratulations again on your new role. But thinking about the world as it stands today and all of the difficulties we've got, knowing that there's a leader like you who puts the sort of heart back into logistics, the heart back into why environmental concerns matter, and the brains behind why data counts, I just find incredibly inspiring. And before we went to air, you told me that you've never been more excited than the role you're about to take. And I just salute you for that. Massive congratulations. Are you able to sort of give us a bit of a snippet of what you think your world is going to look like in the next 6 months? Is this going to be your biggest challenge?
I mean, I've been really lucky and I've had amazing bosses. Brian Steen at Samworth shouldn't have given me the job as MD and he did. Philip shouldn't have made me CEO at Fowler Welsh, but he did. So earlier in my career, I had some wonderful bosses as well. When you've led three businesses previously and you're going into a new business, if you'd asked me when I was 31 and I went into Samworth as MD, I'd have said, I'm good enough, therefore I'm old enough. And there is some truth in that, but there's an authenticity that you learn that I certainly didn't have then. So I was, to some degrees, playing the role of MD, and now going into what will be my fourth role leading a business. There's a comfort that I have. There's an honesty. I don't know all the answers. I will get stuff wrong. I'm happy to say I don't know. I think the authenticity comes from being successful in two or three previous businesses. I can now just be myself and know that somehow we'll find a way through this. So the next 6 months for me, it will be about getting to know the team, really trying to help them help me properly understand the points of difference so that we can get the messaging right and we can really distill down what we do in really simple language. I'm a great believer in simple language. All the good people I've seen speak keep things super simple. And I find some people, Dave Lewis at Tesco, I heard him speak a couple of times, and he was so clear, concise, and simple. And that's all people need. You know, we don't need big, impressive words and convoluted explanations for things. Life is pretty simple. Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting to know the business, getting to know the products, getting to know the people, and then we'll come up with a plan.
I want to know, in all of this, because you have done some stuff, and I love listening to your journey. Some similarities with my own and Sarah's, but lots and lots of very, very big differences. And in all of that, what are you proudest of?
Oof. What am I proudest of? How many can I have?
Let's go with two.
Oh, I was hoping for three. I think I'm one of the things definitely that's up there would be we wrote at Fallow Welsh our first environmental report in 2017 that we published. So 9 years ago. I'm not sure many businesses were producing a report of the quality that, and I did it with lots of people were involved, but a lady called Tori Knowles did most of the work. And it was a super, super, super document, and I've still got a copy of it. So I was definitely proud of that, for sure. I'm not comfortable saying what things that I'm proud of, if I'm honest.
Good.
I think I've tried, certainly in my work life, to lead to the values that I think are right and proper. And I can certainly say that I've not lied in business. I've not manipulated in business. And there will have been times when I could have shortcut things by, planting a seed in a slightly unscrupulous way. I have been party to information at times that I could have used as an advantage. And I've never given into that temptation in my working life. So I'm probably proud of that. You don't actually have to be ruthless in business to be successful.
I love that, Sass. I don't know about you, but what I'm seeing here is output and character. And I'm so glad we limited it to two, because I just think that is the perfect balance, right? That there's achievement over here and output, but then here's the character that formed the foundation of said achievements across the board, and make all of those achievements so much more valuable, in my opinion. I don't know, what about you, Sass?
Yeah, I just can't get away from the word resilience. You know, I think whether it's the sporting person within you, Nick, or whether it's just that sort of, you know, a start in life that wasn't as you planned, who knows? But I know there is a direct crossover between sport and resilience. But you also offer, as Paul says, this kind of compassionate leadership, which is an amazing quality.
Yeah, I'll be brutally honest, at times I've not been resilient. You know, what you're seeing today is someone who's just got back from a lovely holiday and is super excited about the next chapter. But there's been some really dark, lonely days leading businesses, and you know, you talk about things I'm proud of. What I'm not proud of is at times that will have been visible to my team. You know, I'm not always resilient, and I do have some regrets about the way I will have spoken to people at those times of high pressure, and including Mr. Alera, who I apologized to him a few years later, and said, "I don't even remember that, boss."
Oh wow! Yeah. Oh wow!
So, well, okay. Yeah, but yeah. So yeah, it's you can be polished, you can be relaxed, you can be in a good mood, but there's always another side.
And I think it's worth us. We often, as you perhaps know from the ones that you've listened to, but I think it really is important for us to see how great leaders deal with that, and what does that lowest point in your career feel like, and how did you turn that around for good? Because clearly you did, because you're here and you've had some amazing leadership roles. Can you reflect on a moment that was just, it felt like rock bottom? It doesn't even need to have to be a work scenario, and how you navigated that? Give us some insight.
I've wrestled with depression my whole life. So work has been at times a distraction from that. Sport was often a distraction from that. And I can tell you that some of my very darkest days, people around me at work would have had no idea at all. So there's an ability to mask that I've developed that frankly has probably been unhealthy. It's meant that people close to me have had to deal with the impact of that. So I'm not sure if I had my time over, I would have dealt with things the way that I have. I think the resilience is that in spite of all those things, you know, I didn't win last week's 400 meter hurdles quite as good as I want. I'll have another go tomorrow. So there is a resilience and a desire to continue to try and grow as a person. I think it's at times it's been really tough. Yeah, it's been really tough.
And how do you bounce back? I mean, you talked about the running that race again, but in terms of life, you've been able to draw yourself up and you know, put the mask down and let the authenticity come through. What was that journey like?
It's been long. I'm still on it. It's hard. It's painful. It's lonely. I think the best way to get the bounce back is to hit the bottom as hard as you can and hope that you come back up quickly. but I think that there is something in me that, you know, despite all of my frailties, my weaknesses, my failures, my regrets, in spite of all that, I still believe I can be better at some point than I am today. And yeah, I do that through reading a lot. I do that through trying to improve myself as a person. I do that through exercise, and I do that through trying to lead in a compassionate way. And so I think it's a combination of those desires to always be slightly better. Don't always get it right, but
incremental improvements again. You see, be slightly better. There's nothing wrong with that. It's such a compassion with yourself is one of the most important and yet really hard things to do. And obviously on the EV Cafe, we're really big on mental health and being aware of your position and therefore asking for support and help around you. It's really kind of you as well to acknowledge that there are people in your life who have had to take the brunt of whatever you've been feeling. And we so often forget to thank those around us. And you used a word there, which again, I find so difficult, which is the word lonely. It's hard when you can't find anyone to relate to you and what you're going through. You have lots of love, another L word, loads of love around you, I'm sure. But unless you've got someone who's going to sort of sit with you and go through those hard hitting waves at the level you've been operating at, the bow of the ship breaking against all of those crashing waves of turbulent time in the world, but also just dealing with huge business fluctuations. I think I'm really glad you've just had a trip away. I'm really glad you've got this role. I see nothing but positivity in your future because you've got the same toolkit that you're going to apply to everything that crosses your path. And congrats to anyone who happens to now be working for you. I think you're going to have an amazing time ahead.
I hope they feel the same way.
On your first day, be like, can I just show you this podcast? I'm a really nice person.
Yeah, this is nice, Nick.
This is nice, Nick. Yeah, he's good.
Just be wary of the time he might chew your ear off.
My colleagues at Fallow Welsh, my close team, and we did everything together. It was a real good team. But they will quite happily share with you over a beer the time that I was so annoyed that I walked out of the room and slammed the door. I didn't feel I slammed it hard enough, so I went back in to slam it a second time.
No. Oh, that is fantastic. I can safely say I've never slammed a door. But yes, that is fabulous. Now, Paul, I can see you sitting there. I feel like you've got a little something up your sleeve. Are you?
I'm aspiring to that level of commitment to make your point. I mean, it's just great. There's many a time.
Soft closed doors ruin the moment.
Yeah. Oh dear. I have had a moment exactly like that. And I remember walking, I won't name the individual, but we had a proper row in a sort of team leadership meeting. And, you know, we had, he said, why can't you be as good as him? I said, how dare you compare me? Rah! I'm going to call HR. Get them on the phone. Get them in here now. God. Anyway, so, and, the guys were going, oh, we want tickets for this one, you know. And so I walked back in the room after everybody had gone and I had to go back in and talk to him. And so I walked in and stood up. And he said, sit down. And I went, no, He said, sit down. I said, no, you've pissed me off. I'm not, excuse me, sorry, but I'm not sitting down. It was, yeah, anyway, that was...
So you just stood up?
Stayed stood up. Absolutely.
Okay, that is fabulous. I thought you were going to throw the chair or something.
No. Violence. It was glass walled office on two sides. So it was just...
We had an audience as well then.
Yeah. But I think we had one of those doors so that, you know, I couldn't slam it. So anyway. But Nick, listen, we have some good news in all of this because we have a special presentation for everybody that joins us on the EV Cafe podcast. And it is now that time because as a closing tradition, we have the EV Cafe magic wand. So you can now wave this with one wonderful wish. So it's coming over the airwaves to you right now. Assuming your Wi-Fi is good enough. There it is. It's arrived. It's not only arrived, but it's transformed, which is fabulous. And what we do is we give you this wish, and you can. We've had world peace. We've had, as everybody that ever listens to this bit knows, we've had a personal chef. We've had all kinds of things. So world peace is sorted.
No one's wished me my fame and fortune as part of this magic wish. Isn't that annoying, Paul?
yeah, likewise. But Nick, you have one wish. Use it wisely. But what would that wish be?
Probably rather dull. But I would wish that government legislation was properly thought through and had a long-term approach, not just the constantly changing back and forth.
Do you know what? You're not
That's actually
lonely.
Not, that's not dull. Yeah, exactly. That's not dull at all.
It wouldn't be my opening line in the pub.
Fair. That is fair. but it is really important. But this, I mean, you know, and it just shows actually the level of insight, because I think there's a lot, you know, anybody that sort of looks closely at the world, we need certainty in this time. Certainty is absolutely critical. We are only pretty much certain that, you know, we were pretty much certain that the Conservatives would be out in the last election. We're probably pretty certain that there's going to be some change in the next election. We're also pretty certain that it's chopping and changing. We've had however many road ministers and this minister. They're changing like, I don't know, the guard.
The guard.
Yes, changing like the guard. So I think pretty insightful. But Nick, listen, it has been a real pleasure. What last thoughts would you like to leave us with? Or have you told us everything? Oh, look, we got hearts coming from Sass. But anyway, yeah, go on.
I probably told you enough.
Good. That means we've asked all the questions, and I managed to ask five questions in one again, even though I really tried hard not to. But there we go. Sass, this has been amazing, hasn't it?
Yeah, it has. I can't wait to sort of hang up and then tell Nick what we've been putting in the private chat. But safe to say, I am in awe. What a wonderful leader, a compassionate leader, and one who's taken all the lessons from sport around resilience and personal growth and applied that to, frankly, our industry. So I, for one, am so grateful to have spent this time with you.
Thank you.
And do you know what? I tip my hat at your bravery and courage to share that actually there's times when there's a mask on, because I've lived a large chunk of my life with a huge mask, which ultimately ended up in disaster. I'm so pleased to be looking at somebody that has, you know, gradually kind of prized the mask away and is, you know, there'll be days when it's back on. I know, I understand that. But there are days when you were able to be authentic and to be true. And to share that journey with us, you know, for me was a really special moment. But like somebody growing up in the commercial vehicle world for the last, you know, 20 some years, you know, it's great to see the leader, one of the leaders that has shaped, certainly in sustainability and that, and driving that focus and carrying the mantle forward with a company that we know well in Holman. And, you know, I've known of Holman in its origins, and now as it's moving forward, I'm really excited to think that we would get more opportunity, not just on a podcast like this, but times to collaborate, because that was something central to what you said and is our heart entirely. I know from one of your esteemed clients, they are very passionate about collaboration and really want to change the industry. For me, this is like super exciting for the future because we can see a lot of change needed, but also a lot of thought and a lot of certainty and a lot of clarity needed. And I think you guys working with some of your partners, we'll leave it at that, will be able to really enact some of that. And so that makes me very, very happy.
That's the plan.
That's the plan. And so if you want to follow along that plan, obviously you need to, you know, check out the EV Cafe YouTube, follow on for more podcasts, but also check in with Nick. Nick does actually use occasionally LinkedIn. Recently seen there raising money for TransAid. So if you go to his last post, you might want to help TransAid out. So click on that link and help that because that there's a great, we didn't really touch on that today, but you know, one for another day. And of course, you know, look out for all the other podcasts. But this has been special. We are so privileged, genuinely, to have had time with you, Nick. Thank you for sharing all that you shared today. In the meantime, everybody, we look forward to the next one and have a great day.